Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 268. I'm kind of whispering because I'm in a hotel room and it's very late because I just got into New York late because we're doing New York Comic Con this weekend and we're doing our live show at the Best Buy Theater, Nerdist Podcast. So other quick announcements, Talking Dead returns because Walking Dead returns Sunday, October 14th on AMC. There's that. Also, hey, support the podcast. Go to this podcast page. Go to the Amazon banner. Click on it. Shop as you normally would. You'll support the Nerdist Podcast. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do this fast because I feel like at any second there's going to be banging on the wall and not the good kind. It's going to be the shut up kind. But my continuing to talk about what I'm afraid is going to happen is only lengthening this intro. This podcast is Liam Lynch, who we've been kind of acquaintanced for a while, but not actually ever actually hung out. So this was super fun to actually sit down and talk to Liam. Liam turned out to be one of the most interesting people I've ever talked to. I mean, I knew Liam from Syphil and Ollie, and you know, he directed Jesus is Magic, and I knew him as a guy who, and United States or whatever, and I knew him as a guy who just like, oh yeah, he makes a lot of cool stuff, but I had no idea how far I would go. And as a matter of fact, he's a huge Doctor Who fan, which he sent me a version of the Doctor Who theme that he did just fucking around, and so I tacked it on to the end of this podcast. So here you go, the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 268 with Liam Lynch. Sorry, hotel neighbors.
That's all right, Chris.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
LED.
It looks like a sonic screwdriver.
It looks like a sonic screwdriver, but it's a vaporizer.
Oh wow!
A smoke vaporizer.
So wait, what's in it though?
There's thousands of flavors, 10,000, 20,000 different flavors, because it's open to food things.
Yeah.
So you can.
Birdie Bot's every flavor smokes.
It's like Willy Wonka invented smoking, and it doesn't hurt you or smell, or there's no smoke. That's what it's like. So, like, and it's cheaper than smoking. It is. The schnozberries vape like schnozberries.
Wow.
They vape pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, but it's so, if you're like a nerdy, so I filled this up, and this would last me a whole day, and it's so cheap, and it's so good. It's so much better. This is a variable voltage mod. And I can, it checks the ohm rating of my cardamizer.
Mm-hmm.
The,
hey, where's the flux capacitor?
Yeah, exactly. But you can set the voltage to high voltage.
And it just
What's
fires.
What's the difference if it's a higher voltage?
How hard
it's
it shoots.
Like if you.
And this is allowed.
Are you like, ever a smoker?
That's just
smoker?
Water vapor you're shooting
just
at, right?
Water vapor. There's yeah. nothing. No
so it's
smell.
Just like about
burning.
The, it's just about the mental idea of just being able to do that.
Well, there's
no,
something
it
in it that
feels great, and it tastes incredible. It tastes so good.
It's like a hookah pipe, right? You're inhaling. Are you inhaling it?
Yeah, I'm inhaling.
Is
water vapor?
Is there a tobacco element to it?
If you have a tobacco flavor, there is. But you can also do
nicotine?
Literally apple. You can have it with nicotine or without, and you could do apple stuffed waffles. And it's like
Jesus Christ.
And it tastes like you're eating that. And it's
but what's the
amazing.
Chemical thing that it's doing to you? Is there any kind of thing you're inhaling or any kind of buzz that you get from it, or is it just
Well, you can get it with nicotine, but you can control the nicotine, how much you want when you buy the different flavors. So it's what you can't do in cigarettes. You can't, like, you can wean yourself off nicotine from, but there's nothing wrong with nicotine. It's almost the same molecule as caffeine.
It's the tar.
It's everything else that they
put. All the other chemicals.
They know that cinder going into your lungs.
That's what it is. It's ash and carcinogens and the chemicals. They add, there's like 700 chemicals in a cigarette, and when you light it, it makes almost 3,000 chemicals.
Jesus Christ.
But in this, there's three ingredients. So it's you know, water and propylene glycol, and then a flavoring of sorts.
Apple
even
waffles.
Even like the American Spirit stuff is just like, it's no good. It's still burning.
It's burning, you're inhaling ash.
It's like running into a forest fire. Just inhaling.
No, they just put a Native American. Just putting a Native American on something doesn't make it healthy.
Or makes spiritual.
It's just a healthy branding. It's just a branding thing.
Yeah. Wood coin. But
dude, honestly, it's like the evolution. It's like, this is what they'll be doing in space stations.
Yeah.
You know, like, whenever I think, like, I'm like, Boba Fett has this in one of his things. You know what I mean? Like,
he gets
in the ship, and he just like lifts his helmet up, and he's like,
after a hard day of bounty hunting, I like to sit down with a nice, cool drag.
Because, you know, these won't clog space station air filtration systems like ash would. All you're doing is humidifying.
It's wampa flavored.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of the Jabba, you know, frog water hookah.
Right. That's what that was. That was a frog hookah.
Yeah.
That Jabba was
little frogs in there.
Yep.
Just little plastic frogs.
It could be frog too.
And then a little buddy that laughs at you.
Salacious Crumb?
Yeah, Salacious Crumb.
Well, there's a certain element of smoking that I think is not, that is also beyond the, you know, I'm getting all these chemicals, or whatever, but it's just, I think it's the focused breathing thing. Like, if you're stressed, if people are stressed out,
I agree.
It focused, like, that part focused your breathing.
It slows you down.
But so bad for you.
It's terrible for you. And I hated it, and I smoked for a long time, and I tried everything to quit. And then, and for me, it was more like, if I wrote my day as in a diary, a cigarette was all the punctuation, every comma and period. I got in my car, period.
Yep.
Had a cigarette. I walked outside, comma, lit a cigarette.
Right.
So I removing that from my life was really like removing all the punctuation out of my day. And it was weirder. That was the weirdest part for me. But I tried the e-cigarettes, those little ones, and they didn't satisfy me. And I started learning about it and realized that there's all these great American companies that are making these really beautiful objects. And
so that's a high voltage vaporizer.
Yes, high voltage. And those little ones that look, you know, they're these little Chinese batteries, and they don't last and they don't satisfy you. And if a smoker tries them, they're going to be like, this is...
You just want to smoke again an hour later.
Exactly. Hmm. So I kind of did those half-half for a while and then went full bore and really got into it. And it's kind of like a really weird...
You mean you have boar flavored?
Yeah, it's boar flavored.
Full boar. But like half boar, if like you're just not that hungry?
All the ham flavors, they really cover great.
You have wild boar on the islands of Hawaii.
Yeah.
That fucking scared the shit out of me once when we were hiking through.
They can fuck you up.
We were hiking through this was ages ago with Jacinda, I think. We were hiking on Kauai. Mm-hmm. We're sort of hiking through the forest, like, oh, we kayak to the waterfall from Fantasy Island. And we're sort of walking through this trail, and we just hear this, like, clump, clump, like this heavy hoofs dropping sound.
And there's the boar from Lost. I mean, run!
Yeah. That's what's funny. Like,
and then
when
the bushes separated, and someone was like, that was probably a wild boar, and you're lucky that he didn't charge you.
Yeah, because they can take out your fucking legs.
Yeah, they're just crazy.
Yeah, I remember when watching Lost, and there was it was about before the polar bear was about to start running up, and I was like, oh, they're going to think it's something crazy, but it'll just be a boar. And then it was a polar bear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, boars are... Don't mess with the boars.
But I remember smoking. It's just...
Did you ever smoke?
I did in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry I ever did. And I just did a Larry King interview, and he goes, "What do you regret most in your life?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't really like to, you know.
Yeah.
I don't really. I try not to live with regret." And he was like, "Mine, smoking."
Oh wow. Does he have problems? Wow. You think?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, he smoked. I assume he smoked for decades, and it just
cigars.
Like when you get older, it just doesn't do anything good for your. I mean, it doesn't do anything good for your body. Period.
Yeah.
You just when you're young, you're dumb, and so you don't. You're just like
you're invincible.
It's like it's like a mortgage. It's like a health mortgage. You're like, I'm borrowing against.
Yeah. Who,
you know.
I'll pay it later.
Yeah, later on.
I
and
never
then,
got
but
into
then
it.
When you do, like.
I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I never got into it. I don't know why. My mom smoked, and like good. I just thought it was...
why you didn't get into it, because you had to live around it.
She would always hide it. It was always that obvious thing. Really? Like you'd walk in a room and she'd like put it behind the chair, and you just see smoke coming up from behind her. And I'm not smoking.
Smoke's coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, like, honey, exactly. Mommy's lighting farts.
Yeah,
exactly.
But you know, I was like a straight edge kid, but then even when I started like, you know, drinking and trying drugs and stuff like that, it's still smoking cigarettes was always just like, I don't see the point.
You became a craggy edged kid.
Yeah.
I don't drink or do drugs of any kind. I never have. But smoking was like always the thing I did. And it unfortunately became part of my like work ethic. It was like the writing at night and lighting a candle. It was kind of like having a cigarette burning while I was working. And I work late at night. But this totally replaced it. And what's really cool is that they have these things called pass-throughs that it is exactly like a hookah. It plugs into your computer, the USB, and it's powered. So you're literally like smoking from your computer.
As soon as we can give them vaginas, why would we ever leave the house?
If you want to be a nerd,
as soon as there's some sort of a food matter duplicator.
Yeah, exactly. it's been great though, because I haven't smoked in almost 3 years.
Oh, that's awesome! Oh, wow.
Because that's when you started on trying all those things.
Yeah. God, I don't miss it at all.
I'm so glad I'm.
You can't deny though that it does look cool. It does, and that's like I'm not trying to make a joke. It looks cool. Smoking a cigarette looks cool.
You know what? It depends on who's smoking it. There are some people are like, hey, Gary, what's happening? And you're just like that. And it's like, he's holding a cigarette with smoking. The gap in his teeth.
That's cool. Like, I saw this one band play, this band called Party of Helicopters, and the drummer, just amazing drummer, but just cigarette hanging out of his mouth.
Bunny Carlos. Yeah,
Bunny Carlos.
Hanging out while he's hanging out of his mouth.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Not a super healthy looking guy, by the way.
No. But looked cool.
No, he looked like he was in his mid-50s when he was probably like 25.
If you look at a lot of bands though from the 70s, all those guys look like they're fucking 30 years older.
What? Frampton was only like 25? Yeah,
exactly. None of them had hair, and they were all just looking just like,
crazy.
Doing tons of fucking drugs.
Yeah, none of them looked healthy.
I mean, if you could come back during any time period, I think it would be fun to just be like a fucking British rock star in the 70s.
Yeah, for sure.
And where it just no one gave a shit about anything. There was unprotected sex, or tons of drugs, drink. I mean,
being in Motorhead in the 70s.
All those people if you had to live into the 80s, then it gets dicey.
It gets
but if it was just the 70s and you just sort of live like, what
they
a
were
fun.
Large.
Yeah, you,
yeah,
for sure.
Everyone was like sexual revolution and.
But it was just the dirty end of it, you know?
It was
like
totally the dirty.
It was just the dregs of just like, oh, let's just fucking, like, it's like the peace and no war stuff just went out the window. And it was just really just about the drugs.
As much as I think of the 80s as being kind of like neon and day glow and clean lines
and
bright colors and shoulder pads and, you know, checkerboard patterns. The 70s is just like. Just like a greasy ashtray. It's just like
it's brown and orange corduroy.
It's a bar mat with cum on it.
We even say that too. Like even when you just watch TV or movies from the 70s, everyone's like sweaty. Everything's brown.
Sweaty.
Smog. There's still tons of smog in the air.
Just, the 70s just had like that fucking plastic covering over vinyl furniture with like brown cigarette burns.
Diesel film over.
Yeah, everyone watching. Even watching the Brady Bunch, you're like, nothing looks clean.
Doesn't look clean.
Like, just hairy vaginas and stinky buttholes. And
like, they didn't have toilet paper.
That's why they grew their hair out.
The 70s.
Yep. Hairy vaginas and stinky buttholes. I like to use a word like pussy, but then butthole right after. Like, it's really funny to use really filthy words and then, like, a word a kid would use.
That's, my favorite new character, the guy that, like, can't follow through with his dirty talk. It's like, hey, Chris, you take that little cunt and shove your wee-wee into her.
God!
I'm sorry.
It's just like making a word like pussy boogers. Like, it's those two words next to each other. We haven't really earned our explicit tag in a long time. I feel really good about this today.
You gonna take your throbbing cock and put it into her poopy?
Yeah, I'm gonna put it into her twee twee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Twee
twee. I don't know.
I don't know what this is.
It's a bird's vagina. Right in the old twee-twee. But Liam, it's nice to have you on because our paths have almost crossed
so many times. We have so many
numerous times
in common.
Going back to MTV.
Yeah.
Back into the old days of
the
MTV.
Olden days.
So let's just talk about Syphil and Ollie for a second.
Okay.
Maybe you might know that Jonah's girlfriend did a performance to a performance as Syphil and Ollie.
She'll be very upset that I'll tell her.
What?
Tell him. She was hoping he would forget about it, but you probably have. At a Syphil and Ollie convention, my future wife did a really bad magic act.
Oh, performed a magic act? Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and then but she was I think she was 18 or something. Oh, wow. But she's when we were at the table at the wedding, she's like, I just have this feeling that he remembers it for being so bad for some reason.
No, 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 no. That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah.
So how did back when MTV was doing fun,
they were
experimental programming.
So much stuff. I mean, they invented reality television somehow with Real World. I mean, that was really, really, I can't think of a, that really set the pace for how bad a lot of television is now. they really, and Liquid Television, I mean, there's so many.
Well, MTV was innovative programming at one point, particularly because no other channel would they basically, MTV was the internet before the internet.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Where it was low-end kind of user-generated programming.
And then they were willing to take chances.
Totally willing to take chances, and everyone expected that. And so, and then at a certain point, their core audience got older, and they tried to program younger, and then it became more about Laguna Beach type stuff.
Well, and Real World actually was the start of the end for them because they realized that they could get huge ratings and have hits that weren't people's music videos. And then they started just working on making shows exactly like The Real World.
Well, it didn't take... I mean, what people need to understand about MTV is that even early 90s, people were like, MTV doesn't play music videos anymore.
Yeah,
and the reason that happened, I mean, it was purely a sort of a Darwinian survival thing. People were fascinated by music videos in the beginning to mid 80s.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, what an amazing art form.
Yeah. But then
we could watch these over and over again.
I remember when MTV turned on, I was waiting on the cable box. They had a countdown and of till MTV starts. And I remember being in front of the TV to see the countdown go to zero. And then all of a sudden the network come on.
That's
I
crazy.
Saw it turn on.
I've had the wireless back in 52.
Yeah.
You know what's weird though is and in videos didn't even really get watchable or very good until the 90s is when they kind of upped the game.
There were some cool ones in the 80s. I mean the Peter Gabriel videos were fucking awesome.
Yeah,
the Cars always had neat ones.
The Cars had great videos.
Really
and then
different.
U2 did cinematic videos. And,
true.
You know, it's... I'm positive that I mentioned this before, but so much of the British music invasion in the United States in the 80s was because American record labels didn't want to put their artists on MTV for whatever reason, but the British bands were like, "Fuck it, we'll do it." And so that's why Duran Duran and all these British bands that kind of that new
Dexter's
wave,
Midnight Runners,
Come On Eileen, all that wave of Britpop that came over was because of that, and then around the mid 80s, I think they started realizing okay, so people aren't going to just sit and watch music videos anymore because we're already chipping away at their attention spans. We have to create original programming. And it happens to every cable channel. Mm-hmm. Every cable channel ends up getting to a point where they're like, I think we have to create original programming to build an audience.
We're going to have to do a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's when
the TV Guide channel says they have to make original programming, every
that's when you start, that's when you start seeing, that's when you start seeing shows pop up like Remote Control and they start putting the young ones on and they start running Monty Python and they start, Kevin Seal, Sport and Fool and just all these weird shows. And that was really their kind of how the programming ushered in. And that continued for a good 15 years of original programming, and then it just all went
kind of south.
But so how did they find you? How do you pitch a sock puppet show to MTV? Did they just know that they wanted to work with you, or did you pitch the show?
How did I start it to begin with?
Yeah,
I was living in England for about 4 years or so, and I started Syphil and Ollie in England, and I made the show. I borrowed a video camera, VHS camera, and I didn't have anything. And I really wanted to do stop action, but I didn't have the things I would need to do that. And I made them puppets out of what I could find, which were socks. It wasn't like, it's a sock puppet, it's a thing. It was just like, that's what I had. Chester, who's a character on the show, I made out of a rubber mold that's used to make statues of Buddha. I don't know if that gives him really good karma or bad karma. But so I made a bunch of shorts and I sent them to MTV Europe. And I made 10 of them, and they licensed all of them.
Oh, shit.
And they said, make more. And I made some more, and I made more, and I made more, until I had done about 110 just shorts. So then I started making tapes of them and sending them to MTV America and, you know, like, trying to call them and trying to get them to watch this tape of, like, all these different short episodes. These were like anywhere between 30 seconds long and 2 minutes long. And there was a lot of sibling rivalry between MTV Europe and MTV America. But Syphil and Ollie were on all of MTV Europe, MTV Africa, MTV Australia.
Wow.
Before it was like a half hour show. And so then finally, I think actually with the success of South Park, which when it started, the thing that was insane about South Park that freaked everyone out was how cheap it looked.
Yeah.
Because it was like cut out card construction paper. And so with the success of South Park, I think they're more willing to take a chance with Syphil and Ollie. And so they said, how would you do a show? And I wanted to keep it those shorts. So I made short segments so the show worked in as sandwiched vignettes.
Well, especially because the executive at MTV, who I believe had to have been one of the people who brought in Syphil and Ollie, was the guy who commissioned Spirit of Christmas.
That's exactly right.
Brian Graydon.
Yeah, and him moving from Comedy Central over to MTV, I think he had that feather in his cap, and he had the confidence with, like, you know what, people will accept something if they like the attitude of it, not just how it looks, the production of it. And for Syphil and Ollie, it was really about how little can you do and consider it like a show. Like, I would have the ones that were on Europe, it would like come on and they would be sitting there and it would be silence, and like then one of them would just go like and then it would end, and then it would be like, and then the theme song would play, and it would be like a minute, you just watched 2 minutes of puppets thinking.
But that but you know, and that the spirit of that is so much in the old Matt Groening Life in Hell cartoons of just like, like eight panels of Akbar and Jeff, and then one says somebody, then they're like, let's get pizza, you know? And then like, that's the whole cartoon.
It is like that. So, so we made two seasons, and then we also did a third season that was going to air online. And this is still very early for videos to be online. And I remember that we had a very small size, and I had to make sure that I made everything really simple looking so that if it was really compressed down small, that I had to make type font really big on the screen so that it would be legible, because there were like, we had, all right, I want you to make a TV show. You got 6 pixels. Go. You know, and so
someday these will just be called thumbnails.
Exactly.
But for now.
Exactly. That's exactly. It was the size smaller. Than
everyone had dial up. So.
Yeah, everyone did have dial-up, and it was all like 320 by something, you know, and it was really small and really bad, you know. But at the time, MTV Online was trying to break free of MTV. They're like, we don't need you. We're our own thing. I was like, no, you're not. All your content is about our network. So they were trying to break up. They had this huge argument, and in that, and they were moving offices in New York, right when the Syphil and Ollie season 3s were supposed to go online, they never went online. So they never showed them. So they let me have them back. And
what are you doing with it?
But and then 3 years after MTV canceled the show, the characters reverted back to me. So I could do whatever I wanted with them back in like 2002 or 1.
Yeah.
But I haven't felt like doing them until now, you know.
And so you're doing them again?
I'm doing them again now.
Where?
But you put out a few albums. On Machinima. Since then, right?
Oh, you are? Oh, it is Machinima. That's right.
Yeah.
I knew I'd seen it online, but I couldn't remember where I saw it.
I watched it today. It's great. It's really fun.
Yeah, so what we're doing is I'm doing video game reviews, but all the games are completely fake. So I'm reviewing real reviews for fake games. Oh, and I do 3D animation, so I get to make up these games, but then I'm also creating what you see the gameplay of these games.
God damn it. Now, I like the Machinima guys, but I'm jealous that we didn't get to you first. God damn it.
It's really good.
That's such a fucking awesome idea.
And so all the games are completely fake. You see, and a lot of them are based on absolutely nothing. They're based on daydreams you have in the shower and go, oh, that's funny.
Is it?
And then other ones are spoofs of obvious, like we have like mock effect. With the mock effect, man will not be able to reach the farthest corners of space until he can travel faster than sound itself. With the mock effect relays, this is possible.
Is this on Main Machinima or Machinima Prime?
It's on Main Machinima. It's part of the Happy Hour lineup. And new episodes go up every Sunday. And I did 8 episodes, plus I did a promo, which is basically just me singing a song called Motherfucking Pie.
Yeah, that went on iTunes today.
What's that?
That's on iTunes.
It is on?
Yeah.
It went up today?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great. I've been checking. I put it up weeks ago, and it takes forever for things to show up on iTunes.
Tuesday.
So there's a promo episode, so it was like 9 episodes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me so happy, because Syphil and Ollie is one of those shows that just survived in the culture. You know,
it was so, even when we were on the network, it was like we weren't a part of it. It was like we were on a cable access show that was on MTV or something. It was so like in its own bubble that I think, and it's pretty funny too, because when you put them online, I'm like, you know, everybody is so evil online. It's a constant barrage of getting roses and rocks thrown at you.
Right.
That you just feel not happy or sad about anything you do on the internet, because you have so much equal hate and love opinions at the same time that you just end up gray. But I've been happy that the comments in general have been those of being pleased to see Syphil and Ollie again.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it is comforting to know that everyone has that experience on the internet, and that's just how it is.
Well, it's weird.
That's just opinions. That's just people. The more people you meet, the more you're going to meet that don't like you.
Yeah.
That's
just
how it is, you know?
That's the odds. It's weird, though, when you see like a bad comment and you go, fuck that guy. Then you see a good comment, you're like, well, what does he know? He's just a guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You don't want to take credit.
It seems like what's happening, you know, on Machinima I was especially, because that is the most like harsh group of angry people, the gamers, like really hardcore gamers that just want to bomb you with hate and snipe you if they could.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it seems like what's happening is a lot of fans of the show, anybody that pipes in like, you know, what the fuck is this? Or what is this? They get bombed by everybody. We're like, yo, noob, you're too young. You were in your mom's vagina when I was watching Syphil and Ollie smoking bongs, bitch. And like, so they're really, the fans are like, productive, like, don't touch my childhood memories.
Here, let's do a little role-playing thing here, okay? So I'm going to be a guy. And then the first conversation...
I don't know if I can imagine that.
So just pretend I'm a guy for a sec. Mm. Here, I'll take my dick out. Okay, that's all I really want to do. So here's what we're going to do. I'm a guy...
out of Jonah?
And then no, into Jonah. Then you're going to reach through Jonah.
I'm listening.
and pull it through his pussy and butthole. So you're gonna say, hey, here's this thing I made. And my first guy is going to be a commenter. And then the second time you say it, I'm going to be that same guy that you're meeting in real life.
That sounds great.
Okay, ready? So you're going to present your thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's episode 1 of Syphil and Ollie.
This is an abortion. I can't believe, all caps, I wasted a minute. I wish I could cut off your fucking head and shove it up your ass and then back down your throat, you piece of shit fucknut.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh no, and now it's just
in person.
In person?
Yeah.
Oh, like, oh, hey man, how's it going?
Hey.
That's exactly right.
Real big fan.
I'm by myself, bravery. I'm by myself and safe.
Yeah.
Balls.
Yeah. The anonymity thing is a comfortable tower.
Well, it's the same reason that, you know, like if someone cuts you off while you're in your car, you're gonna fucking go, oh fuck you, you piece of shit.
And
if someone cuts you off in real life, you're just gonna go, oh sorry.
That
but if they were in the car with you.
That, yeah. That actually, I had that epiphany a week ago where I was screaming at people in traffic under my breath or just in my car. It was just one of those days where I needed to get somewhere and everyone was like slower than the rest of traffic, cutting you off, like slowed down. They made the light and I would catch the light. It was just one of those like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Yeah. And then for a second I was like, oh my God, I'm the internet. This is what the internet is. Exactly. People think they're isolated and they're alone and they're looking at a machine with text and they don't realize that they're... I would never shout these things if I had a convertible and I had to actually deal with people.
It's like Robotech. You feel like you could do that.
You're protected.
The weirdest thing is that...
A rage bubble.
You know, if I see something... you see stuff online that you think is stupid, you just don't watch it.
Yeah.
I can't believe that there's people that take the time...
Some people want to be angry.
Do you know what I mean? Like they it's so clear how they don't have a way of expressing themselves in life or getting venting. Like they don't have any place to put it. You know? You just want to like go and like be like, dude, check this out. This new hobby you can get into, have some fun in your life. Or so, I don't know.
You can devote that energy.
I feel sorry for people that have that much anger.
I think some of it's a little bit of a release that they just can't release into their own lives. Yeah. And so they... Yeah. It's sort of like
role playing. Asshole role playing.
It's sort of role playing. Yeah, I had this idea once for it was basically a subplot of the movie, and I don't know what the movie was, but it was just a character trait where a couple, in order to spice up their life, their love life, they would go out and pick up a second guy, and then he would start fooling around with a girl, and then the guy would get super jealous and beat the shit out of the other guy, and then they'd fuck.
Wow.
Because like I think that happens a lot in real life anyway.
He had to. It's that idea of like trying to create that emotional experience so you can feel that emotion, or like how you, Jonas, say you like to watch really depressing videos.
Yeah.
It's just like I think some people, or like why you listen to a bad song that you know you hate, just so you can be like, fucking hate the, it's like
just for the emotion,
just so you can release the emotion
sometimes
of it.
Some people are so desperate for a feeling that they'll settle for anger.
That's why I listen to the band Fun, just to get angry.
What is that?
It's just the worst new band.
I don't is it like One Direction kind of band?
No, it's you've heard Fun.
I don't know if I have.
Oh, well, then that's a kind of just a reference that's just gonna fall flat.
Maybe not. Tell me about it.
I don't want to.
I want you to explain it so much you get mad.
How are you gonna? It's like this. It's like, and I'm
we'll sing one of their songs because you seem to be a fan.
No,
you're a fan of Fun.
It's bad.
What kind of music is it?
I'm not a big fan of Fun.
I don't like Fun.
It's not good. Not good. Fun.
But genre? Is it hip hop? Is it club? Is it like LMFAO? What is it?
No, it's like kind of like indie rock kids that listen to Arcade Fire and want to sound like Queen. or like there's even elements of
it's like Gautier meets Public Enemy meets
like what's that
meets Whale Song, like Journey. I mean actual Whale
like,
Song,
like they have it's this like anthematic
like
journey.
Asia meets Sticks.
Yeah, they have some, but they have like
the country of Asia kind of meeting
like
a pile of
journey
sticks
elements to it, where it's like you know, like a lot of, you know, operatic singing, and
it sounds fun.
It's not. It's the opposite. That's actually the review for the Fun album. It's just like Fun. It's fun. Not.
By the way, why did it take someone so long to name a band Fun? That seems like it was just right on the tip of our culture.
It was Fun with a period after it.
Oh.
I bet there was a band called Fun that they couldn't.
Yeah.
So this is ironic Fun. Fun period is like ironic Fun.
They're so bad. They're so bad.
Are they kids? Maybe it's because maybe you're not the right age group.
I don't know. Nirvana were kids. Strokes were kids. Fucking Stones were kids.
Yeah, no, that's true.
That's true. So I'll bring things back to just to
Thanks.
Plug the thing, the Sif and all my stuff. I wanted to make them. I went to Machinima because it's the biggest network without being a TV network.
An enormous.
And I do stuff with TV networks, but TV is in such a slow motion suicide, and TV can't exist without the internet now.
Right.
It really can't. And it wants to be the internet. The internet doesn't want to be it. It's this weird, but right now it's really exciting because, I mean, people are clamoring to figure out how to make money, but it's a really exciting time where there's no rules and things are kind of fluid and you can make roads, which is, those moments are rare.
Yeah.
Where it's a chance to really set up your own rules. So I wanted to go with Machinima just because it isn't a network, but you could reach as many as a network, you know.
And also, more in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and it's also a reaction of the people. Machinima wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the internet and a need naturally sort of happening. You know what I mean?
If your video gets like Epic Meal, a show like Epic Mealtime, mm-hmm. you know, gets 2 to 5 million views per episode, those are bigger numbers than The Daily Show.
And I don't think bigger than what Syphil and Ollie got on MTV.
So. And I don't think people realize like what kinds of numbers we're talking about. And, you know, the infrastructure of television makes it impossible to operate like the internet. There's too much. They're too expensive to run. There's too much fear. They're too beholden to advertisers.
There's too
many employees making too many decisions. And it is they lack the ability to be nimble in the way that you have to be,
or focused
with web content or niche or like just one simple idea. And so, you know, a lot of companies go, well, how the fuck do we make money on the internet? And you go, well, okay, fine. You may not make $1 billion in advertising revenue. It's like, don't think of it necessarily as the same kind of TV model, but what you are doing, you know, like in Machinima's case and, you know, other cases, and hopefully we're trying to do this too, is, you know, you can build out your thing to the point that when the inevitable shift does happen, then you have your audience and you can program for that kind of mega platform. So it's more of a long-term plan but so many companies are like, you know, well, how am I going to make, we need to make $1,000 a minute off our video. And like, well, it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah. If it takes $1,000 a minute for your company to run, but you can do it a lot smaller and make more money. You know, it's frustrating, but it's also exciting at the same time. And so that's why yesterday I was doing press for Syphil and Ollie stuff, and somebody asked me if you had just come up with Syphil and Ollie yesterday, would you have taken it to networks, or would you just go straight to the internet with it? Which I thought was a good question. And I said, I would have just gone straight to the internet.
You would have just made it on your own YouTube channel.
Yeah.
The same way that you did when you were just doing it in Europe.
Yeah. When I was doing it in my living room, and, you know, even when I made it for MTV America, I made it in a friend's living room. And I was like, I don't want to set foot in a studio. We don't need, it's a sock puppet show. Give me a break. You don't need it's not, you know. And so it was all really like homemade. It feels like that and looks like that too. But
So then you had that, and then you had, was it United States of Whatever? The Whatever song. Right, which got huge.
But that was top 10
song in England and in Australia.
So how did you? That was another facet where it was like, oh, now I have this hit song.
Well, after season one of Syphil and Ollie, I didn't know if we were going to get a season two, so I started doing a comedy album at home and just making songs, and that was one of them. And then we did get picked up. I released my album, and I just released like 1,000 copies of it on my website, and we did a season two, and when we would do the songs for Syphil and Ollie, the way the schedule was is we'd have to have, there's 40 episodes per season, so I would have to have 40 original songs. We had 9 days to write and record 40 songs.
Oh my God!
So do 4 albums in, you know, less than 2 weeks. So
what a crash course, though.
Nothing has ever been harder than that.
And you don't have time to second guess. It's just like, fuck it. You just have to do it.
So, so we came up short 3 songs. And so I was like, well, I have my comedy album. I'll pull 3 songs from my comedy album. So it was an album called Fake Songs. And so we pulled United States or Whatever. And, I had a fake Bowie song and I had a fake Dylan song, and I just used those in the season and Syphil and Ollie. But then, whatever, I had season, we got canceled. Some years went by, and like 4 or 5 years later, maybe 4 years later, somebody bought my CD off my website years ago. They made a copy for a friend. That person really liked that one song. They put it on a copy. It copied and copied and copied and copied for 4 years until somebody gave a copy to a friend who was a BBC DJ. And he heard that song and he put it on the air and is like...
Was it John Peel?
No, I don't think it was John Peel. It was somebody else. And his switchboard lit up, so he started putting it in regular rotation. And then the other BBC people started seeing that was on the list, and then others, you know, and so it went to, I think, like number 8 or 9 in the charts. They asked me to be on Top of the Pops, like, and I was on the road with No Doubt, oddly enough, and I was doing a video for them, for a live DVD. So I was like, I can't be on, I'm working, I can't be on Top of the Pops. They're like, you have to be. I was like, no. So I made a video for the song, and I was like, I'll make them a video and send them a video. So I went home on that weekend, and I made the music video and sent them that so they'd have something to show. And then I got in the Guinness Book of World Records because it was the shortest song to ever become a top 10 hit in the UK. So then I later found out that I like that. So then it got really big over there, but they were still playing. They were all playing copies of a copy. It wasn't released anywhere. So I did like a deal for a single over in just the UK and Australia. And then when I was literally at home one night, and I got a call from Ringo Starr. And he called
Liam,
me,
hi, like, it's Ringo.
Like, Liam, this is Ringo calling. I just thought I'd come and set up my drums in your bedroom. And so he really loved the song. And I had, when I lived in England, I was studying with Paul McCartney. I lived in Liverpool for 4 years, and I was studying music with Paul McCartney.
What do you mean you were studying music with Paul McCartney?
Studying music with Paul McCartney.
I don't, what are these words that you're saying?
But Ringo didn't know that I had lived in Liverpool and studied with Paul.
You've collected totally two Beatles.
Totally unrelated. And I said, you know, I actually lived in Liverpool for years, and I studied with Paul. And then it just like, total phone silence. And then it just said, well, I won't hold that against you. Well, so he created a label for me, and then he played drums on my album, and that's how Fake Songs was released in America. It was Ringo created a label just so that we could put out the album, and so it's really totally bizarre.
What were you
story.
Studying with Paul McCartney? You're studying music. What is he teaching you? And what is Paul McCartney? Can you have a normal conversation with Paul? Or are you like, hey, Paul McCartney, I'm going to go get a sandwich. What do you want, bologna? Like, how do you?
Well, he's really complicated. I think he's a really complicated person, to be honest. I think he's one thing on the outside. I think he's something really totally different on the inside. I think he has his aura has a callus from keeping people from taking his energy from him.
Yeah.
So like when you're with him and you're looking at him, he feels one way. But then if you're close enough to him that you're inside his bubble, he feels totally different. I know that sounds weird, but it's like his energy. Like if you've had the whole world looking at you,
of course,
your whole life,
yeah,
you have a force field. And I got to hear a lot of insane stories, and equally with Ringo, because I haven't seen Paul since back then.
You mean McCartney and Starr? That's what you're talking about right now.
No, well, Ringo's a friend, and I do see him, but Paul I haven't seen since back then, since I studied, and you know, so that,
but
how do that you, was right before.
How do you come under the tutelage of?
He started a performing arts school in Liverpool. It's the school that he and George went to.
Mm-hmm.
It's attached to the art college that John Lennon and Stuart Sutcliffe went mm-hmm. to. And they were going to tear it down, and he bought the building and refurbished it, and the Queen matched his money that he put into it to bring money and things to Liverpool, because it was a very poor city in England. And so it was a performing arts school. I heard it was about to start, and there were 40 musicians from around the world, and I had to go through a bunch of auditions and, you know, interviews and stuff, and I got in, and I think there was only one other American there, but he actually auditioned in Germany. He was an American living in Germany, and he came in as a German student, but he was American. It was really intense that when I would meet with him, it was one-on-one. It wasn't like a classroom. So they would tell me, I wasn't allowed to tell anybody when we would have lessons, because the press would get out and
sure.
stuff. In Liverpool, it's insane. And they didn't want it to be hard for him to come to the school. And, I'd walk into a little room, it'd be a little soundproof room, and he'd have his guitar there. And, you know, I'm a night person, and I would work at night, and the studios, there were studios at the school, and I would check them out, and you could get, you could get like 4-hour blocks, and at nighttime nobody would schedule them. So I'd take 2 4-hour blocks, so I'd have 8 hours. So I would work through the whole night so that I could use the recording studios. And so I would be up all night. And then the next morning, thankfully, I was so sleep deprived that I kind of had a ghost pillow around my head that cushioned the surrealness of what was going on, because I was kind of in a like, oh, you're Paul McCartney, that's cool. But he was really the most intense, and the most incredible thing about the whole experience for me was, well, for one, the first thing out of his mouth was, nobody can tell you how to write a song, which is great to hear him say, because if anybody could claim they know how to write songs, it's Paul McCartney. And also, the most incredible thing was hearing him singing, sitting right next to me, and hearing it come out of him as a person. Even if you see him live, you're hearing it through a microphone, through reverb, through a mixing board. If you listen to his albums, you're hearing recordings that are mixed. But to hear the actual instrument not coming through a micro PA was, like, blew me away. Like, something so familiar, and it's so effortless. Like, it's like singing is more comfortable than talking for him. And his voice was, like, fucking, it was like velvet hearing him sing, hearing it come out of like a person that's right next to you. You just, and that was weird. The only weird things was that, and the very first time I met with him, I was nervous and sat down, I had my guitar, and I'm supposed to play him a song I'm working on, that's, you know what I mean, like, and he took out his guitar and he picked up his acoustic guitar and picked it up left-handed. And that's when I was like, holy shit. You know, that was weird.
And he played a lot with, his process to try to get you to open up as an artist and see things that you like break through walls?
And just business things and, you know, business stuff and writing and methods. And
what did he teach you about the business?
I mean, lots of stuff. I was doing Syphil and Ollie when he was, even though I was at school studying, I was making Syphil and Ollie, so I would make him tapes and he'd watch them on his plane flying back down to London, and just weird stuff, like, you know, there are so many funny stories about it. I don't know if you want me to take up the whole time talking about just this, but
this is an amazing development.
Yeah, it's really,
and we haven't even gotten to Ringo yet.
I worked with George Martin too in the studio, which was equally for me was like working with Merlin for me, because I'm a studio engineer, and for me that was he is like the godfather of multi-track recording, and there's we do a lot of things, like there's a lot of stuff over there where your mixing equipment is and recording equipment that is he started. You know, for reasons of the Beatles' creativity. And he would tell me things about, like, you know, he told me, like, when they'd be in the studio, Paul would come in and have an idea and parts, and this does this, and the horns do this, and he'd play things out, you know, and John would see a Leslie cabinet with a spinning speaker, and he wanted George Martin to tie a rope to his belt loop and put mics around the room and to spin him around the room. To spin him around the room past the microphones. Like, well, or we could use a Leslie. You know, so really, like, great stories. And but Paul would say, you know, like in writing songs, you know, I had a song and I think it had the word very in it. And he was like, you know, there's certain words that, you know, you just don't use, you know. Like, you know, when John and I were doing Peppers, and you're just like, oh, you mean Sergeant Peppers that you did when you were like 24.
Yeah.
You know, it's like insane realities. And you're like, oh, Sergeant Peppers. Yeah. Okay, go on.
I've heard of it.
And he's like, you know, there's certain words like very or really that don't really mean anything. And so he seems like they had a lot of rules between the two of them when they were writing songs. Like I could see that. I could see the two totally different personality types that are both badasses in two different ways.
But just so complimentary. I remember seeing an interview with him and he was talking about when they were writing Scott, I've Got to Admit, It's Getting Better. And he's, so he, so he's, you know, Paul came in with like, I got to admit, it's getting better. And then he said, John kind of leaned and went, can't get much worse.
And that's it.
And then that's the song. Like, that's so condensed this kind of relationship, it seemed like, that they had, and just the two ways that they
came
at everything.
And it was an incredible time in my life, too, because it was so surreal, not only because of that, but I lived in Liverpool City Center, and so you're dealing with that reality, and like across the street, I'd walk through a graveyard to go to the school where, and on that brick road behind the graveyard was Charles Dickens used to walk down
Jesus
that street. Hitler used to walk down that street because he went to the art college that John Lennon went to when he was a boy.
Jesus.
And then you
figure,
like, okay, so I'm walking down this street. It's 7 a.m. I have been up all night. I'm going to see Paul McCartney, and I'm walking a path that Charles Dickens, Hitler, and the Beatles all used to walk daily. And you're just like, you know what? I'm just going to go get an egg sandwich.
It sounds like an old icebox.com cartoon, like the Beatles, Hitler, and Dickens all lived at a college.
It kind of is like a joke almost.
That's unbelievable.
You know, Hitler wanted to be an artist, you know, and then he studied art and everything, and then I think he was trying to make certain that school got bombed.
Oh, because they didn't. Yeah. But so listen, support your kids if they want to be an artist, or they're going to turn into
John
Hitler.
John Lennon was there studying sign painting. A lot of people don't know that, but he was actually at art college studying to painting like lettering for science, because that's like a decent job where there's always work.
Oh my God.
Yeah, insane. And then all the stories with Ringo and George. Danny Harrison's a good friend of mine. I just did a video this week with Danny Harrison, and Ringo introduced us because George was Ringo's best friend, and so Ringo introduced me to Danny, and now we're best friends. So it's really
interesting. How was Ringo to work with? He seems like a decent chap.
He's the coolest dude. He is who you want to hang out always. He is so down to earth. And funny as shit, and he sees things so simple that there's never bullshit involved. What he tells you is honest, and it's black or white. Just he is what you get. Like, it's just, you know, he made up a lot of the phrases that are in the Beatles songs, like Hard Day's Night. That's something Ringo said. 8 days a week is something Ringo said. And he's kind of one of those dudes that'll say something that you could just take out of his mouth and go down to the tattoo parlor and have it put on your arm, you know what I mean?
It's the United States of whatever.
The first time I met him, it was on Sunset Boulevard. We met and had dinner, and he found out that I'm a Doctor Who fan. And so whenever I first met him, I'm like waiting in front of this restaurant, and he pulls up in the car, and he gets out, and he goes, puts his arms on, and he's like, give me a hug, I'm a hugger. And he gives me a big hug, and when he's hugging me, he like reaches in my coat and he's put something in my coat, and I'm like, what the hell? And he gave me a Doctor Who the movie that was on television,
the Paul McGann movie, with the Eighth Doctor.
No, the old one.
Oh, the old
the Daleks, Invasion of the Daleks. No.
Yeah, Dalek Mania.
The movie that was the Dalek Invasion movie.
Yeah,
and he stopped on the way to dinner and bought me a Doctor Who DVD and gave me a Doctor Who DVD.
Oh, that's so sweet.
How cool is that? Like, that's what type of guy he is. And I think it's because his lows were so low in his life that I don't think any highs could, he's grounded. You know what I mean? I think he had a really super, super poor childhood. He spent his whole childhood in the hospital. He was a sick, poor kid in a hospital his whole childhood. And he learned how to play drums because they'd bring percussion toys into the hospital. So you're talking about somebody that came from that to, you know, being a Beatle. And he's just a warm, awesome person.
Like, I think he's going to outlive. I think he's going to be the last.
I do too.
I think he's going to be the last remaining Beatle.
Yeah.
I think he will be.
I've always
hated the
stigma that like he wasn't a good drummer
He's
the worst.
One of the best drummers.
Yeah.
In the history.
So that whole John Lennon thing of like he's not even the best drummer in the Beatles. Like that's.
Yeah, I mean
shit.
Paul's a good drummer. I mean Paul's drumming on a lot of Wings stuff.
Yeah.
But Ringo, you know, I just did a documentary. I was for a year. I was in the studio with Dave Grohl and John Paul Jones and Josh Homme from Queens of Stone Age, and I talked to John Paul Jones, got every Zeppelin story out of my head. But he was saying that Ringo Starr was John Bonham's idol. John Bonham idolized, like, that was his favorite drummer, and he was like, Ringo always says was
then
great.
Why do people give him so much shit? That, like, not shit,
and
but
Dave
just...
Grohl, who's a friend of mine, is an incredible drummer, and his idols. Drumming idols are Ringo and John Bonham.
Was it just that John and Paul were such powerful personalities, and Ringo was fine to just sort of like not be such a, you know, like such a face of the band, but that he didn't, because.
Well, I think a lot of the times, the songs that they were bringing songs to the studio. If I think about how the writing process worked, it was probably John and Paul bringing songs into the studio. And then those guys playing to them. So I think that part of being on the backbeat is also the fact that he's playing to them. He's playing to the guitars rather than the guitars playing to the drums.
Got it.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that that's part of it, is that he was... And what's really cool, too, is that he would... When we would work in the studio and he drummed on my stuff, he would write on the drum heads. Two times, verse,
what?
Two, chorus, turn around... Phil, and so he'd write on the drum head.
There was his notepad.
Yeah, he'd use them. There were, you know, sticky notes, you know. And then he had X's on his cymbals. I'm like, what are those for? And George Martin had put them there. He told Ringo, like, this is the sweet spot. This is where the cymbal sounds the very best. Like, George Martin went and, you know, tapped out the entire cymbal and found where the sweet spot was. Like, just crazy stories.
I mean, it really was, it's like the combination of that and him as a producer. It just seems like if any one of those elements were not in place,
then they
would have made good stuff individually, but just like,
they did, yeah.
It was just seemed like this, because it seemed like you have to have a guy like George Martin to, and the sort of technology revolution that was beginning to happen around that time, to start playing with stuff and figure out how to pull everything together and mix everything. And it's like every element.
They're innovating everything. I mean, everything
it was just like
an innovation.
It was just like, it's just like all green lights driving across
all
town.
All green lights, and the entire road is they did it first. From recording guitar feedback to, you know, it's just amazing.
What an incredible.
Ringo told me. I go and hang out with him at his house, and he tells these stories. And like, I literally was talking about my cats. You know, I have five cats. And we need to talk about that, too, because I cloned one of my cats.
Well, okay, we're going to talk about that in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and we have to have a cloning in Doctor Who episode. But he told me about the first time when they went to Elvis, when they met Elvis. And he said that they went to Elvis's house, and they were all so nervous. This is like Beatles' first trip over to America.
Right.
And...
Ed Sullivan trip?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to meet Elvis while they went to Graceland, to Elvis's house, to visit Elvis. And they went there, and the weirdest thing overshadowed the whole trip for him. He said that they went in, and this is, you know, I don't know what year that was, 68 or, no, maybe
it was earlier.
Earlier than that,
that'd be like 63, 64? Maybe. 60.
I don't know the exact year, but I think it's mid-60s or early
mid-early.
60s.
Yeah.
They went to Elvis's house, they walked in, and he was in his living room, and he stood up, and he had probably like a Bakelite remote for his TV. He shut his TV off with a remote and set it down and stood up to greet them. And this was literally the first time, and it probably was one of the very first remote anythings. Like, the fact that it had a remote, they were like, he just... turned the TV off without getting up and turning the knob.
Is he some kind of a wizard?
How is that possible? So the whole time, Ringo said, like, as soon as they got outside, they were like, what the fuck was that thing? How did he do that?
Oh, this is my, it's not a screwdriver. I'm a Time Lord.
Exactly.
Nice to meet you guys.
Yeah,
how's it going?
Exactly. Like, it's so funny, those sorts of weird... And then, anyways, like, I was telling him one story about my cats are so stupid. So I'm like, oh my God, my cat, yes. And I reminded him of a story. Like, I reminded him of something to say afterwards. And this is how it started. I was like, so anyways, it was crazy. And he's like, that reminds me of the time... I'm not making this up. This isn't a trying to be funny exaggeration. This is word for word. I remember this one time it was me, Salvador Dali, and an American astronaut on this yacht. And we, and I said, and I go, dude, stop. And I fell on his floor. And I was like, don't you dare even tell me the story. I was like, the fact that I said something that, the fact that you were on a yacht with Salvador Dali and an astronaut, I don't need, that's the story, Ringo.
And this adorable cat. Go back.
Yeah. It's just like unreal. So, I mean, there's like, there is a, there are Beatles stories that are unlike other rock stories because they're the Beatles.
And yeah, and there's so much weight. And you, I mean, I find it remarkable that even after all that time, you were able to sort of keep it together and not be like,
the first
okay,
time,
I died. I must have died. I died in the flight over to England.
The first time I had a class with Paul, and I found out that I got chosen because there were a bunch of musicians in the school, and everybody had to put one original song on a cassette tape, and he listened to all of them, and then he picked five people that he'd work with, and I got to be one of those five.
Jesus Christ.
So, and I don't know if that meant that I was really bad or if I was really good.
Probably the latter.
So the very first time that I met him, I said, I know you're a really good drummer, and I'm actually forming a Beatles cover band, and we need somebody to be Ringo. And so I actually asked Paul McCartney to be in a Beatles cover band with me, but he has to be Ringo.
How
postmodern is that?
Did he think that was funny?
And he couldn't fucking believe I said that. And he laughed, and then he said, "Watch it, lad."
Wow. Which could be very loaded.
He has a great sense of humor. He just wasn't ready for, he just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, Weird Al shot something. Like, Paul, like, they managed to wrangle Paul to shoot something for that exhibit that he did. Remember the exhibit that he did at the Orange County Fair? It was about the brain, Al's brain. And it was like, so we're shooting with Paul, and we get him in there, and
how he talks.
He does the take a couple of times, but he's not, he's like, but I just want him to do it one other way. And I'm like, Paul, can we just, and he was like, we got it. And I was like, okay, we got it. Like he kind of felt the wall go up a little bit, and then, you know, Al's very sweet and not confrontational, and it was just immediate. It was like, thank you so much.
I'm good friends with Al. I did his video for, Craigslist.
Yes, you did the Craigslist video. You've done a lot of, you did Sarah's concert movie, right?
Yeah, I did Jesus is Magic.
Jesus is Magic.
I directed an episode of her show and Pick of Destiny, Tenacious D.
You've had amazingly diverse, what's your sort of underlying, besides cats and Doctor Who, what's your sort of underlying motivation? Like, how do you see yourself?
I love making stuff.
In any medium.
Yeah. It's also a problem sometimes for me because people need to know that that's the guy that does this. And since I've never really been just that one thing guy, when I do get jobs there, I don't know what people have seen, why they're giving me a job. So I have to ask them, are you hiring me to be a writer or a director or to write music for this? Because I do all that. I write music for movies and shows and
because you meet a lot of people in LA and they're like, yeah, I'm a triple threat, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm right. But you actually do all these things.
Yeah, I do them. But because I just love making things. It's really so simple. And it's like it's like for the same reason that when you're a kid, you love playing.
Yeah.
It's like, what, you know what I mean? So I'm always making stuff. And if I'm making things for other people. I just finished another video with Tenacious D this week, but I also did their album art, album art. I did Them Crooked Vultures album art too, even though I was doing their documentary. I ended up doing their.
So this is going to be a new Them Crooked Vultures.
No, this is the last one.
Oh, okay.
I did the vulture headed guys.
Oh, yeah.
All the artwork and everything.
Nice.
So I end up getting hired to do different things, and I never know what it's gonna be.
That's fucking awesome. That's awesome.
It's kind of fun because it all spawned from Syphil and Ollie, and I did different. You know, I was writing it and doing the songs and directing it and doing all these different things, and I kind of got jobs in different places coming out of that gate in those different things. You know what I mean? Somebody would hire me because they liked.
It's interesting. It's just it's so common now for people to go, well, I'm just going to go make my thing because technology is inexpensive and delivery systems are easy because
we
have YouTube. But you were doing that in the 90s when it was expensive and hard, and there really wasn't any way to distribute that stuff other than I'm just going to pass these VHS tapes around.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Or public, or maybe public access, maybe. But for the most part, it was an interesting, I think that's how you can tell like who the hardcore artists are, because even in the face of everything saying like, there's no way that you can afford or distribute this thing and you still make it anyway. I think that's very telling.
Every single success I've ever had in my whole life has been the result of something that I made for me.
Yeah.
For fun. You know? And so it's like everything. Like everything that I've done, that anything that's good that's ever come to me, or any bill that I've ever paid, has been because I did something because I didn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, I did, you know, it's usually, or like, you know, I'll get a job doing something for commercial or something because somebody saw the drinking out of cups video.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, I don't know if you've seen the drinking out of cups video, but it's this video that went super viral, and it's this lizard that's talking about a lot of surreal things.
So you must sit in a lot of meetings where they're like, we want you to make us a viral video. And you're like, you know, it doesn't work that way, right? I can make you a video.
A lot, you know. But the good thing is that I do have the ability to make things. My podcast, I started video podcasting really early on, back on iTunes in like 2004. And making Lynchland episodes, you know, like a lot of people, I've gotten a lot of things from people seeing those episodes that were for... and. Lynchland, this podcast I do for fun and for free, has had incredible guests on it too. Ringo's been on there, and Danny Harrison, and Jack, and Tim Robbins.
So Tony, I mean,
Hawk, like all these great people, and it's for no money and just for fun. Like, just it's so cool. Like,
it really is. The lesson is that you just have to make stuff that you love and that you care about, and then the other stuff will fall into place.
And it does make a full circle back to Syphil and Ollie, because that's something I made just because I had to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I had to see my friend Matt and I talking, but as these like characters in this sort of like obtuse, you know, surreal show.
Last 2 points. You cloned your cat. So...
yeah, and in fact, today's
September 11th.
In 4 days is his birthday, his seventh birthday.
The cloned cat's seventh birthday.
The original cat that he's cloned from is dead, but the clone is 2 years older than the cat, his clone father.
Mm-hmm.
His clone father was Frankie Forcefield.
Okay.
And he's Finnegan Forcefield, as in like Finnegan's Wake.
Sure. Yeah.
And
It also has almost the word Finnegan, again, in it.
Yeah, Finnegan, begin again.
Begin again, yeah. So how did you, if the cat's 7 years old and cloning technology is a relatively nascent science at that point, so how do you approach, did you do it in England? Is that how you're able to do it?
No, I did it here.
Where? What piece of the cat did you take? What cellular structure?
Well, the cat I was supposed to clone him, while he was alive. The idea was to have him raise himself. Because he deserved that situation. He was the weirdest cat on earth. And I was like, you know what? You fucking with me? How about I introduce you to you as a baby? So I set it up to clone him. My vet was actually studied, you know, genes and genetics and stuff. My vet studied, I think, genetics his degree was in, actually. And so he was down for it to take the samples. And they take a little sample from the roof of the cat's mouth, and they take a tiny little sample of skin from its stomach externally. And I set it up with the company, and I set it up with him. And I was getting ready to do it, and then like the week before I was going to do it, the cat got hit by a car.
Oh, Jesus.
So then I went out and I brought his body in and I put it in the refrigerator. I didn't put it in the freezer because I knew that if I put him in the freezer, the water in his cells would freeze and destroy the DNA. But if you refrigerate it, it would keep him. So I had him in a...
well, that's not weird
bag.
That you know how to preserve a body.
No, right. But I put him in the refrigerator, and then I called the company. I said, the cat I was about to clone just got hit by a car. And they said, well, if you get it to us within 5 days... there's still a chance.
Then so, right there is a Smokey and the Bandit comedy where you have to get to Texarkana, Texas.
The most precious cargo.
Feel it out.
Listen to that engine purr. Yip, yeah. Yip, yip, yip.
Yeah. So, when they took samples, they took them from internal organs, and they took a lot of samples because the cat was dead. It wasn't going to get any fresher.
Right.
So they took a lot of samples from Frank, and then they grow eggs, you know, cells, like, and they grade them like eggs, and they take those cells and they shock them, and they start dividing, mm-hmm. and they rate them like eggs, A, B, and C. And then the good ones, they pull the DNA from those cells. They get a female cat, and they
get it drunk.
They get her, yeah, real drunk.
They send her to a bar.
And they get her eggs, and they take her information out of her egg, and they put in the DNA from my cat,
mm-hmm.
so that it seems as if it's the makeup of a mother and yep. father. And then they shock that egg with insanely low amounts of voltage, and it starts multiplying. And then they get a cell cluster, and they put it back into the mother's womb. And then she grows a baby, one kitten that isn't born in a litter. It's just a single kitten. And she gives birth to a baby that she has no relations to. And they actually impregnated two cats to raise the chance of it working, and both of them became pregnant, but the one kitten died.
Aww.
Not because it was a clone, just because kittens die.
Yeah.
And so the mother's one of them's name was Blue, and the other one, I can't remember the other one's name, but the one that gave birth to Finnegan, if they had both lived, the other one's name was going to be Fett after Boba Fett.
Oh, of course.
This mother gave birth to Finnegan, but she never had sex. They did it C-section.
So your cat is Christ.
He's Christ's cat.
Yeah.
No, but she never had sex, and she had never had a kitten before, and she
the C-section. The Immaculate Conception? I'm sorry, guys. I didn't. Yeah, that was not worth it.
So she basically got, you know, like, anesthetized, and they took the baby out, and then she woke up and she was like, there's this kitten, and you don't look like me. So the other, and the cages were next to each other, both mom's cats, and one mom's cat baby died, and the other died like 2 days after it was born. And the other one who gave birth to Finnegan, she didn't even know what it was. So she wasn't taking care of it. She turned her back to it. She wasn't grooming it. She didn't care. So it started crying. The mother of the cat who's died was digging through her cage looking for her baby, thinking the clones was the cry of her baby. So they took this.
This is very complex.
They took Finnegan away from the cat that gave birth to him and gave him to this other mother whose baby died. And because he had the same scent as her baby.
Oh, come on!
And because he basically was, she accepted it as her baby, and she raised it. She raised Finnegan. Even though she also had no relation to him.
Not like that other bitch who just wanted a career.
Ugh. Yeah.
No kidding.
No, but I mean, even though genetically neither of them had any relation, she didn't even
That's
give
unbelievable.
Birth to him, and she was
it's just
like
the maternal instinct.
And,
just, yeah. yeah, just, it's just like
And then when
like
I
caught.
Brought him into my home, all my cats accepted him as Frank.
Because they smell...
Because he had Frank's scent.
God damn it.
So they're like, oh, Frank's back, and he's a baby now. That's really weird. It's like, dude, you look really young. You have work done? You look like you're 12 weeks old?
That's the plot of Benjamin Button. It'll come out in 7 years.
Yeah.
So are you going to just keep cloning that cat over and over again?
No, I was writing a script for Universal about cloning, too. So I was wanting to learn about it, and I got to really interview all the geneticists that did the cloning, and a lot of all the money for we've learned a huge amount about cloning, and it's all come from Texas and these people that breed these prize-winning race horses and steers. Like they sell cum shots from like a bull that
like on red
is
tube
like $500,000 for like a semen sample from a prize winning bull. So sure. Like, well then I want 10 of them bulls. So they put millions and millions of dollars into cloning, and they can really do it. It's closer than a twin. It's not 100%. It's 99.999999 forever, just but it's not.
$500,000 for a bull.
I could do a whole episode just talking about weird clone stuff with this cat. Because the cat that I cloned was super weird and quirky and not like any cat I've ever had. And he was a weird cat. And this clone, it was a really good cat to clone. It's like, oh my God, he totally just licked his paw just like Frankie did. This cat was weird and did really specific things. And I even did like putting all the cat toys in our house. And at one time I had 7 cats, so it's ridiculous. 70 cat toys out on the floor. One of them was Frank's. And I mixed them all up on the floor. And Finnegan, as a kitten, walked right through all the toys to Frank's and picked it up and walked out.
Cellular toy
are
preference.
Endlessly weird, especially the stuff that the geneticists said about cell memory.
So what's going to happen? Were you ever afraid that after like 2 years you're going to go in and then Finnegan was just going to be in the corner smoking like half evolved, like some other DNA got in and he's like,
well, what scared me is that
I've been waiting to evolve, Liam.
The guy, the place that cloned Finnegan, they started a new company. It's called BioArt and they're in Beijing now. And they just, their goal was to clone dogs, but there's a bunch of reasons that are super technical of why it was hard to clone dogs, but they figured it out. And they were going to clone dogs, and they asked if I'd go on Good Morning America because I'm one of the few people that own a cloned pet.
People are freaked out by that.
Yeah, so they made the announcement that they can now clone dogs on Good Morning America, and I went on as a person that has a cloned pet that they had done. And, you know, where was I going with this story?
You were a spokesperson for cloning.
Salvador Dali
comes in.
And I was on this yacht.
Oh, my God. Don't tell me anymore.
But the guy, I remember what I was going to say. The guy asked me to be, they did an auction for 4 of the dogs. They're going to clone 5 dogs for people, and it was going to be an auction for 4, and I think bidding started at like $150,000, something ridiculous. And they auctioned 4 of them, and the 5th one they're going to give away for free. They're going to clone someone's dog for free. So people wrote in their stories of why their dog should be cloned. And I had to be a judge.
I'm sure those were upbeat letters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. It was the worst ever. So they narrowed it down to 10, and I had to put them in the order of who I think should get it first.
Oh, why would you want that responsibility?
Yeah. So, but how often do you get to be in be a judge in a cloning contest?
I think so, once.
Yeah, once.
No, it's That's called American often. Idol.
Ah,
see? Because they're all sound the same. Oh. Come on, you guys.
But, whenever he did it, he's like, do you want to do this cloning thing? I was like, sure, I'll do it. I was like, for a free cloning coupon. Like, I was kidding.
Yeah.
And he's like, actually, you know, get in touch with me when you want to talk about upgrades.
What?
And I didn't ask because what he's saying is, if you want to make an upgraded version of Finnegan, let me know.
With like tiger claws and a fucking alligator tail?
Well, we could do a version of Finnegan, but with like, yeah, one crab claw and hawk vision and glow in the dark hearing.
Now, people are definitely freaked out by the idea, like the ethical terms of cloning, but I'm fascinated by it. It's like, why shouldn't we be able to?
You know what? Here's the truth. If you have a dog, you are guilty of genetic manipulation.
Sure.
Because every dog is a wolf. Now look at a wiener dog or a sheep dog or a poodle and realize that we bred that. We forced breeds through breed, you know, genetics.
Like Gregor Mendel with pea pods.
We shaped them into that.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that with plants forever, mm-hmm. with farming, of merging breeds of plants. And
this just takes all the fucking out of it.
Of,
Lyman.
It just takes, you know, it's been a part of being human is changing our surroundings and working with genetics.
What if he meant he could upgrade you? I'll make a you with a crab claw.
Yeah, I think I didn't ask because I didn't even want to know. I didn't even want to know.
We have like 3 minutes left.
Okay.
I just really quickly, first of all, you've been an amazing guest, Liam Lynch, and I hope we get to do more stuff together.
I'd like to. I actually wanted to ask you guys, I don't know if you're booked all the way through October or not, but I have the most effed up ghost story for around Halloween time, or and if you're already booked through Halloween, I have to come back and tell you it's a long story, but I guarantee you it is the most insane paranormal story that happened to me in England over the course of years.
What?
And it involves the Masons, underground tunnel systems, and whores.
Sold.
you don't need to say the story.
We'll do it. You know,
favorite ghost stories.
Just record them separately, and
yeah, and then we'll just.
I have a really intense one.
That's amazing. Okay, so you promise.
We should play scary wind sound effects or something behind.
Well, we have an instant replay machine right here with scary wind sound effects.
That's what he's. That's
so
what he calls me.
You are, Jonah. Scary wind. Just in closing. You're a huge Doctor Who fan,
and you
were telling me that you actually have episodes that go back to Hartnell mm-hmm. on VHS.
Almost all of mine are on VHS until the new one. I started rebuying some of the old ones as they've been releasing them on DVD, but I've been a fan since the 70s. I used to watch Doctor Who on PBS, and I didn't have a single friend that ever liked Doctor Who. Growing up, I used to go to conventions. I didn't know anybody that even knew what it was. I was just like a lonely American Doctor Who fan It was sad. And then it came back, and now I find myself buying all the toys that I didn't have when I was
a kid.
Awesome Doctor Who toys. And I connected Rob Schraub, is like my a good friend of mine. And
huge Doctor Who fan.
He's a huge Doctor Who fan, too. So he was like my got to connect. That was one of our first things we connected on. But I have a lot of like cool Doctor Who stuff and some like Doctor Who from the 70s, you know, like Doctor Who cookbooks and Doctor Who knitting.
You said you a toaster patterns. Cozy with the kit
yeah,
with
canine? Canine, you know, toaster cozy. And Rob Schraub actually gave me an incredible Dalek, like Zippo lighter where the head goes off. It's like a big chrome Dalek that you know, like light cigars with.
Nice.
And,
exterminate after
yeah,
you light this fire.
I've got some good autographs as well. And, that I bought at conventions over the years, as well as I was telling you, I have a big sketch of Tom Baker's second outfit with this when he changed to his second scarf. And it's the sketch the wardrobe artist did when designing that his
Fuck.
Outfit, and
That's
it's
awesome.
Signed by Tom Baker and the wardrobe
wow.
designer. Framed.
William Hartnell, John Pertwee.
John Pertwee. Yeah, so we have to talk Houston. And I've been loving all the Nerdist stuff and the bowling and everything.
Oh, thanks, man.
With all your Doctor Who.
Known you then, I would have had you come on that. There'll be more stuff though.
We're good friends with Alex, and he's been on my podcast. And
Albrecht.
He that day tweeted me like bowling with Doctor Who. I'm so sorry at Lynchland, because he knew like that he was like Liam should be here, not me.
Well, we'll have you back on in October. I'm so sorry that we have to. I could talk to you for another 2 hours about all this stuff, and we'll have you back
on.
Yeah,
I'll come back on. I know that you would appreciate this ghost story.
It's done. It's booked. We're gonna do it.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Enjoy your burrito, everybody. I don't know why I yelled.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, 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 bye. Enjoy it. Enjoy your very good burrito. Very's not really a Paul McCartney would
really
not approve.
Exactly. Yeah.
And very, you're very
he used
really.
To say, and he said, you know, we'd say like, John would say like, I'm going to write a motorboat. And I'd say, I'm going to write two tellies and a motor car. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, with this song, I'll buy a motorboat.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, fuck. Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.